Adam Clymer covered Congress as a Washington correspondent for the New York Times and the Baltimore Sun, beginning in 1963, the year after Edward Kennedy was elected to the Senate. He is the author of a remarkable biography, Edward M. Kennedy, which captures the sweep and breadth of Kennedy's remarkable half-century of public service in the Senate. Adam, welcome.
Good to be with you, Eric.
Senator Kennedy was such a dominant figure in politics and public life for so long that it seems a Herculean challenge to try to sum up his legacy. He became the patriarch of one of the most famous political families in American history. He ran unsuccessfully for president, and ultimately he became a man of the Senate and the embodiment of the Kennedy family's commitment to public service. His interests and causes range far and wide, from civil rights to foreign policy to health care reform. Adam, what do you see as his greatest achievements as a legislator?
Well, it's ironic to talk about this today, Eric, because he refers to universal health insurance as the great cause of my life. And now he won't be around when the country is perhaps on the verge of achieving some form of it. That, you know, you wouldn't call getting national health insurance his greatest success because he didn't get it, although millions and millions of Americans have better health care because of his efforts, whether it's from the Children's Health Insurance Program that he worked through with Orrin Hatch, or community health centers. He put in the first legislation for them back in 1966 when he was a very junior member of the Senate. He legislated the war on cancer and the creation of the National Cancer Institute in 1971. Probably his greatest single legislative achievement is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which obviously has some relation to health care. But I put it more in the category of his other great cause, which was civil rights, the great unfinished business of America, as he so often called it.
You mentioned that he really first got started in this drive to reform health care reform back in 1966. That was when he made a visit to a Boston housing project, Columbia Point, which had kind of a unique health care clinic there. Can you tell me a little about that?
That was one of the first community health centers. There were a couple of them, and another one in Mound Bayou, Mississippi. And because it was Boston and his turf, he went, and he was fascinated and greatly taken with it. His brother-in-law, Sergeant Shriver, was head of the War on Poverty at that point, and he worked with him and then worked in Congress to put in a rider for a few $100,000 to create some more, something that was probably more easily done in those days, create a new program just because it's a senator's whim. But he remained a staunch defender of that system. The Reagan administration wanted to cut them back or eliminate them. And now I think there are about 1,300 of them around the country providing cheap health care for people who need it.
How did he use his celebrity and political skills to advance his agenda and causes in the Senate?
I'm not sure that he used his celebrity. He couldn't avoid it. It was with him. It would attract attention. His political skills really were working, coming from an era in the Senate when the staffs were much smaller. There was no C-SPAN. Senators spent more time on the floor. They knew each other better. And they managed to rely on each other on issues. Nobody had a staff big enough so he could offer an opinion on every subject that came down the pike. Kennedy told me, for example, that he would rely on George McGovern's advice when there was an agricultural bill on the floor. And other senators had people they relied on that way. But it was these personal relationships which helped make him a success in the Senate.
And he was very good at working across the aisle with Republicans like Orrin Hatch.
Of course. And I mean, he had an early instinct, and this was, he came to the Senate before filibusters were common. You didn't necessarily need 67 votes, which was what the filibuster rule required when he got there, to pass anything at all. They were reserved for issues like civil rights or things of great importance. But there were enough conservative Southern Democrats there so that getting things done, even in those days, invited working across the aisle. And he just had a knack for finding people who might differ with him on most issues, but would be sympathetic on a health care issue, for example. Orrin Hatch and his Mormon faith treat health care issues as very important. And Kennedy and he worked together very effectively on that.
Kennedy and his niece Caroline Kennedy provided an important boost to Barack Obama's presidential campaign, in part because of Obama's commitment to passing universal health care insurance reform legislation early in his administration. The presumption always was that Kennedy was going to be at the very center of that debate. And until the world heard the news that he was battling brain cancer, the assumption was that he would be a major player in all of that.
Even after he was diagnosed and operated on, he expected to come back and be centrally involved early this year. His health didn't bounce back as much as he had hoped, and so he wasn't able to. I think he also, I don't think that Obama's commitment to health care in the Kennedy style, I think some of it is owed to Kennedy's support and assistance. Obama, after all, was not an advocate of a mandatory coverage of everyone. That was Hillary Clinton's position. He wanted to cover all children and hoped to uncover more adults. By now, he's advocating, you know, thanks in part to Kennedy's pressure. Every time Kennedy introduced him, he introduced him as saying, and with Barack Obama as president, we'll have universal health care. So I think he pushed him.
It's highly speculative, of course, but do you think the health care debate would be playing out differently now if Senator Kennedy hadn't been sidelined by his illness?
I don't know if it would be very different at this point. He might well have gotten a bill through his committee with no Republican support, but I think there's no question that it will be harder to get it done in the long run without him, simply because he had the ability to find Republicans to work with, and even more important, perhaps, whatever bill comes out of the workings of the Senate Health and Education Committee and the Finance Committee will undoubtedly not be as liberal as he might have hoped and as many of his colleagues from the more liberal wing of the Senate Democrats might have hoped. But he would be the one who could say, look, fellows, I don't like everything in this, but it's the best we can get, and it's worth doing. And that sort of voice in the caucus has swung Democratic support for compromise legislation and things like the Medicare prescription drug benefit and the No Child Left Behind legislation. So there, and as a voice within a House-Senate conference, are the places where he'll be most missed.
Adam Clymer, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. This is Eric Pianin of Kaiser Health News.